Discourse on We the People, But Who Are We? By Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom, Episode 3, Part 2. In the first part, Chief Justice Taney, giving the decision of the court in the Dred Scott v. Sanford case, was speaking of the past, explained who was and who was not of that class of people known as We the People of the Constitution. Recapping that post, we think that they, the descendants of slaves, whether free or not, are not, and they are not included, and were not intended to be included under the word citizens in the Constitution, and can therefore claim none of the rights and privileges which that instrument provides for and secures to citizens of the United States. On the contrary, they were at that time considered as a subordinate and inferior class of beings who had been subjugated by the dominant race, and whether emancipated or not, yet remained subject to their authority and had no rights or privileges but such as those who held the power and the government might choose to grant them. It is true, every person and every class and description of persons who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens in the several states became also citizens of the new political body, but none other. It was formed by them and for them and their posterity, but for no one else, and that the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace only those who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards by birthright or otherwise become members according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles upon which it was founded. So, the rights and privileges were not conferred upon those who were not citizens at the time of the adoption of the Constitution, and their descendants and others. Those rights, too, are defined as inclusive, regardless of whether he is in his state or another state. Then, in 1867, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified. However, it did not convey rights, only privileges and immunities. From the 14th Amendment, Section 1, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. However, this amendment did not change or undo that which Taney had described as citizen of the United States, though a new class was created by the 14th Amendment. Now, I know a lot of people don't see it that way. They believe that the 14th Amendment merged the ex-slaves and their descendants into the same class of people that had previously held the title of Citizens of the United States, or We the People. However, if you will note the wording of the 14th Amendment, you will see that rights were not conveyed, only privileges and immunities. Now, this may seem small or insignificant, though that is because we have been subjected to political correctness and mountains of legislation establishing civil rights. However, the framers never referred to the rights protected by the Constitution as civil, since civil implies granted by government, which is exactly what the legislature has done, enact laws granting civil rights. These fundamental rights granted by God are not granted by government, and they are not civil rights. They are the object and goal of the colonists from April 19, 1775, to the ratification of the Constitution 14 years later. I might add that there is another phrase in there, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, which I will not go into in this discussion. However, it is addressed pretty specifically in the habeas corpus series. What is very important to understand is that when a law is enacted or a constitution or amendment ratified, the intent at the time of enactment or ratification is and must be what was intended at that time, To think otherwise is to allow the legislation or even the Constitution to mean what was not intended by the slight of redefining words, concepts, or even by enforcement. If that is how we are to operate, we are not a nation of laws, rather of man, and that man who sits in Washington, whether he be a member of Congress, the president, a justice, or an administrative agency head, is free to promulgate what he wants the law to be and applies not what was intended to be, rather what he desires it to be. As James Madison said in Federalist Papers number 62, it poisons the blessings of liberty itself. It will be of little avail to the people that the laws are made by men of their own choice, if the laws be so voluminous that they cannot be read, or so incoherent that they cannot be understood, if they be repealed or revised before they are promulgated, or undergo such incessant changes that no man who knows what the law is today can guess what it will be tomorrow. Law is defined to be a rule of action, but how can that be a rule which is little known and less defined? So, as you contemplate what is said in this part, understand that only the words of those who were alive at the time of these activities can tell us what they meant. It is only their words, not what some ACLU lawyer might try to make them out to be, that we must be obedient to. To be obedient to any other interpretation is, at best, disobedience to the Constitution. We have seen the effect of the 14th Amendment on the rights, privileges, and immunities of those who were and were not of the class known as we the people. Now the question arises as to whether the 14th Amendment changed who we the people are, and if so, what proof do we have that only privileges and immunities, not rights, were conveyed by that amendment? That will be the subject of Part 3.